Hello, I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the SC Ballers podcast. I'm your host and coach of the Terrace Crew, Matt Ricks. I am joined tonight by an extremely special guest. It is someone who has been a baller contributor throughout the year. He's been on a live stream, he's been on a podcast, and most importantly, he has won Supercoach in 2025. I speak none other than Finn English, aka FT. Finn, welcome to the SC Ballers podcast, mate, and thank you so much for your time tonight.
No, thank you. It's an honour to be here, mate.
Mate, what's life been like since the win?
It's pretty surreal. We're about a week and a half out and it's still hard to process everything.
Yep.
But I have a lot of people that have reached out and said congratulations and supported me, which I'm not really ever going to forget that. But it's same old outside of that, just in terms of real life implications.
How many years have you been playing the game for?
So probably since 2014.
Okay, so since you were a real youngster.
Since I was 11 or 12, yeah.
You're like a Supercoach prodigy. You see all these kids in sport who start nice and early. You started Supercoach nice and early.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think about it like that, but looking back at it now, it kind of feels like that. just a hobby, and then I guess when I graduated school, kind of invested more time into it. And it's always like, I always wonder if it's worth it or if I'm doing, if I should do something else more productive. But I'd say it's all worth it now.
I think that's a very common feeling amongst super coaches. But it's a great hobby for people to wrap their minds around. It's much like, reading or, going for nice long walks. It's just something to take your mind off everyday life, and it keeps your brain ticking over as somewhat of a challenge, mate. Speaking of like how much time you spend on it, how consuming was it? Like, I know for me, I work now in it, and speaking to other people just about how much time they spend thinking about Supercoach, it's such a deeply engaged game. How consuming was the process for you being up near the top this year, and your impact on your outside life?
Well, not as much as you with all the baller stuff. I'd imagine that'd feel pretty overwhelming.
No, that's okay.
But I try to block out a lot of it. Like, if I feel like I'm too wrapped up in Supercoach, I'll do something else to take my mind off it. I did start to feel pretty overwhelmed towards the run home, towards the last few rounds, because I feel like I would have been doing myself a disservice if I didn't really try to nerd out and try and plan as much as possible. But other than that, that's why I felt a little bit relieved that the season was finished.
Yeah, you certainly came across as a very sort of balanced guy whenever we spoke during the season, and it was good to sort of support you there and help you along. But when did you actually start believing that it was possible that you were going to take it out? You obviously hit the lead in round 23, but I imagine before that it started getting a bit nerve-wracking too.
So I would say I had a big round 10 score that got me into the top 10. So I think I was 10th after round 10, and that's when I first thought I was maybe a chance, but I didn't give it too much concern outside of that. I'd say after round 18, so after the bye period finished, I was in the top 5, and that's when I sort of said, that's when I thought I could win. I thought, it put me in the raffle, I guess.
Yeah.
Analogy.
Yeah. Nice. Generally speaking about NRL this season, how did you find it different to previous Supercoach seasons, or was there something that you picked up on from the way the game was played? Obviously, we had the flex. And do you think that you sort of identified something early that got you up the leaderboard? In that sort of round 10 and through the origin period up until, when you hit the top 5?
In terms of NRL, not really, I suppose. I feel like what made the season feel different is I felt like I got lucky breaks when I really needed luck. Yeah. And I didn't feel like I had that in previous years. I kind of felt like I maybe had hard luck in previous seasons, but once I needed a score or something to happen or an injury to happen and the scene to happen. That's when I thought, like, this could be my year sort of thing.
Yeah. So you played a pretty similar game style to what you would have played in previous years, just a bit more luck and probably, you know, probably just yourself improving and making some good selections. Just
experience and fine tuning, I suppose. But other than that, I guess I played a pretty similar game.
Yeah. Mate, in terms of let's go back to the beginning of the year and your initial team build. So how did you approach starting the year? Obviously, we're all looking for as many of the good cheapies as we can to fill our team out with sort of those, you know, high price guns and, you know, value picks in the sort of higher price range. How did you approach your initial team build and maybe what did you do different that sort of set you off on the right foot?
This was important because this obviously sets us up for the season. Structure wise, I started with cheap hookers. I think it was Mamazelis and Smith.
Yep.
I had Dylan Lucas as my 2RF anchor. I had Farnworth as my center wing anchor instead of Garrick. The thought process there was I thought Garrick was a bit overowned, so I kind of wanted to take him on with another high price point center wing. Lomax was another option, but I remember wanting to start with Lomax, but when Moses went down, that wasn't an option for me. I just felt with Farnworth, he was the best center wing the previous season, and if he started poorly, I could move him to Garrick or the next best option, but he based well enough and he ended up finding attack after the first few rounds, and holding him up until he got injured was, I would say, long-term, I came out on top with that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. There was obviously the, I can't remember what round it was, but early in the season when Garrick went bananas.
Round three or something. Yeah. That's when I thought I might be in trouble, but.
But you resisted. It's important to note that you resisted the temptation to bring Garrick in, because everyone basically who didn't own Garrick at that point did bring him in.
Well, yeah, I just figured I missed the score. I missed the big one. It didn't look that great, I didn't think, just from my point of view up until that point. I guess I couldn't really stretch the funds to bring him in. And I wanted to hold Herbie and allow him to make it up to me. It's kind of like sticking to the process sort of thing.
Yeah. And obviously you were highly vindicated with Herbie's form. He was by far and away the number one center wing while he was fit this season. Post that initial team build, what were some successes you had in the lead up to that Origin period? Obviously you missed that big Garrick score, but then Herbie sort of went from strength to strength from there. Were there any other sort of key moments in that sort of, you know, first third of the season, I guess?
So how my team was set up, I suppose, it allowed me, and obviously injury luck helps as well, it allowed me to preserve trades early.
Yes.
Which obviously came in handy later. I would say my fullback moves were the most beneficial, and this is where a lot of the luck comes in, as we know fullback is the most decisive position. I would say some three moves I did at fullback pre-Origin were Turbo to Teddy in round three after Turbo got injured.
Yes.
I went Walsh to Pappenhausen in round four, and I went Iongi to Drinky in round eight when the Eels had their bye.
Right. So you started with Iongi?
Yeah. So
yes.
I should mention I went Turbo, Walsh and Iongi fullbacks, and I went Cleary, Hines, double gun halfbacks.
Yes. I think that played out because I started triple gun fullback with Turbo, Walsh, and can't even remember one of the other gun fullback options. Not Ponga,
I'd assume.
Or maybe not Ponga. Maybe it might have been. I can't remember. It must have been Ponga. And I think we saw enough teams. There was more than one way to skin that cat in terms of the flex position that you could go with the three fullback strategy, or you could go with the cheaper fullback strategy. So I think that really that was kind of the big preseason debate, if I recall, is what is the fullback strategy? And at the time, it really did feel make or break, didn't it?
Yes, I do remember that was the talking point.
Mate, when we talk about trades, you mentioned that you were able to save some through that period. Having trades at the back end, would you still say that that obviously we can say that might have helped you being able to sort of navigate being up high and having probably an above average amounts of trades? But would you say that you played a conservative strategy for the year with withholding some of those trades, or would you still say that you played quite aggressively when you needed to?
The most aggressive I would have done trades wise would have been the buy period. I feel like I made my biggest calls early in the season in terms of like ballsy moves. And I guess as the season went on, kind of went more and more vanilla as I guess I was in a better and better position. Post Origin, I had seven trades after round 20. So seven trades with seven rounds left.
Yep.
And every trade up at like after that point was just bringing in high owned vanilla guys to negate other people.
Yeah, right.
So like I guess Dewey and Gagai and the likes of those, like they were underwhelming, but I didn't regret that because I had the trade saved to like cancel out other people. Yep. So it didn't matter how they performed really.
Yeah, and that's something interesting as well. Like depending on what you're trying to do, like it's obviously a very well-defined head-to-head strategy, the cancelling out. But when you're that high and you're comfortable that you own all the big players that you want to, that can obviously be the right move rather than going for that option who might be able to beat that player, but it can obviously, it just brings in an increased amount of volatility into your performance.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know I'm going to be in that point early in the season when I'm saving the trades, but it's either that or I'm chasing points and I have trades in the bank to do that, I guess, chase points.
Yeah. So, mate, you had a pretty tricky start, but you stuck to your guns, kept Herbie. You've got Teddy in your team, which that was actually something that a lot of teams struggled to get Teddy in early enough, and people had to buy him at, you know, quite a bigger amount. I know myself that I couldn't get him in until much later in the season. So that he obviously performed really well through that period. And we get to the Origin period. How did you approach the buyers? You said that you really went more aggressive on trades. Were you looking to sort of make sure that you had the premium options through the buyers, or were you looking more still around your team set up to get yourself through that period and then well set up for the run home?
A bit of both. I'd say mainly wanting to get the best options that can score big as a high upside during those major buy rounds, but also yep. minor buy rounds. I think the first buy round, I sold Haas to Aaron Clark, figuring obviously I'd want Haas back, but
yes,
there is the option to either sell Clark back to him or keep Clark for the season. And Clark performed well enough that I chose the latter. I guess probably the worst move I did over the buy period, I'd put this down to bad luck as well, but I traded Drinkwater to Hopewade in round 14.
Yes.
When Lehigh scored well, had the negative break even, Drinky had the high break even heading into the Storm game. Drinky scores well, Lehigh gets knocked out in the first like 10 minutes. So what I ended up doing, I copped the punch in the mouth and I swapped them back in round 15. And I made maybe 60K, but obviously it wasn't worth the two trades. But
no,
I was able to justify it by having the save trades from early in the season.
I think that's a really important lesson and something that it's very hard mentally to do because you've traded Drinkwater out to then go, okay, I'm just going to bring him straight back in. But if he is the optimal option in that situation where obviously Lehigh was a very clear trade out, he was going to miss a week and then Manly had a bye as well. I think I remember not long after that. So it was very difficult to keep him. But to be able to think clearly and not, I suppose, like most people I think would not make that move in that situation, but like you said, swallow the pride and just make the optimal move. And that trade's obviously worked out really well because Drinkwater continued to score well through the rest of the season.
Yeah, you're right. It would have been a hard pill to swallow. But yeah, I mean, Drinky was the best option, I thought, that week going up against the Dolphins. He was one of those premium options that could score big that would hurt me if I didn't own.
Yep.
It turns out the Dolphins pumped them anyway. I don't think he scored very well from memory, but I'm not unhappy with the process.
You mentioned the Aaron Clark trade in. I think that was one that really worked out. Just looking at my own trades that week, I brought in Joe Tarpany for I don't think it was for Haas, but I brought in for Dylan Egan that week. I still had Egan at that stage. But yeah, I think that ended up being quite a nice trade. Obviously, Clark was pretty much the number one front row forward through that bye period and sort of through really till sort of around 20, maybe 22, 23, something like that.
Yeah, sounds about right. I don't know if obviously the other popular options from Haas were Tarpany and Fanua Blake. Looking back on it, I don't know if those players would have been worth it from Haas to go back to Haas.
Mm.
But I think Clark scored well enough for that to be a beneficial move over the course of the bye period.
The thing I'm taking away from this, mate, as a fellow super coach, and I'm sure the listeners as well, is it's not a smooth ride, is it? There's a lot of bumps along the way. There's a lot of luck required, as you said, but you've had your fair share of bad luck in here this season as well. But it's about not compounding the bad luck with bad decisions. So trying to stick to your process and just continually make as many good decisions as possible and let them compound over the course of the season to put yourself in the best position. Is that something that you were pretty conscious of?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I mean, there's a lot of swings and roundabouts in this game, so it's pretty easy to bounce back after a down week. I think it'd be beneficial to realize that as you're going along the way.
Mate, before we get to sort of the run home and how you sort of, you've mentioned already a bit about how you sort of played a more defensive strategy, but just a more broad question about the flex. Obviously, that was the big change this year from a gameplay perspective. I want to just understand a little bit about how you used the flex during the year. I was certainly of the approach that I tried to keep a fullback, the three-gun fullback strategy pretty much the whole year. But I know other players didn't do that. What was your approach with the flex sort of post the Yongi trade out?
I had three fullbacks there all season, besides the one round of the Drinky to Lehigh there.
Yeah.
It was pretty boring in my case. I know people used it for other players and positions, and then you could swap them the following week, and that worked out well if you could play it right. For me, it allowed the ability to, I guess, for lack of a better word, manipulate scores and loops. Say if you had 18, 19 players, something like that. That's when the flex really comes handy. My most notable use of that would have been in the last round. Playing the round by ear, I left Drinkwater in the flex spot all round. It allowed me to switch my captaincy late to Lomax before the last round of the season.
Yes, and you ended up holding Drinkwater in that last. Did you not use your last trade, or you did in the end?
I did. On the Saturday, I went kick out of Preston.
Right. What was the rationale there? Was Kikau, was he injured or something that week, or was? Or was it a cancellation thing?
Cancellation. Yeah. So gotcha. I think the two teams that were having a good round and on my tail, they didn't own Kikau, but they owned Preston. So he was a dangerous pot against me, was the only reason, really.
And he was coming off the 150 or 140, whatever he got against Penrith the week prior, wasn't he?
Exactly. And like if Preston went 140 again and Kikau topped to 30, I only won by 80 points. So if I didn't use that trade, like, and that happened, I would have lost.
Mate, I'm going to bring up your season wrap on Baller Wrapped here quickly, if you don't mind. And
yes.
Just want to talk about the, in conjunction with the flex and the loop strategy that you employed, you used 4 VC loops for the year, which is probably about around the average number of loops. How did you find that approach with the vice captain? Did you find it was something you were more conscious of? What's my strategy for this week with vice captain and captain? Especially given obviously we had the option to do 2 fullbacks. Was it something that was kind of front of mind in your weekly planning?
Yes, a bit. I did plan to use the VC a lot more this season, just because obviously the flex allows the 2 fullbacks. And also because a player drops out of your 18, it's more conducive to looping. I remember my first loop, I think another mistake I made was, I don't know if you remember, but when Jaden Campbell got ruled out during the round with an ankle injury, I think they were gonna play Canberra, and I accidentally left him starting on field and the reserve on Munster.
Yes.
And I had the VC on Pappenhausen. So I can't remember if there was a clear standout captaincy option that round, but I took the 85 or whatever it was.
Yes. Did he? Sorry, mate.
I was just going to say from vice captain Pappenhausen, just took his 85.
Because you were going to have to take that AE anyway, regardless.
Yeah. I decided I was going to hold Campbell. So I just took it.
It certainly is I was a big advocate for making sure that you gave yourself the opportunity to loop. And I suppose we may as well just chat quickly about Nuffs while we're at it there, because obviously if you've got a very deep squad, that really reduces the impact of being able to loop, because you're going to probably end up with a worse AE. What was your general approach on Nuffs, and did you start the year with any, and how many did you sort of end up with by the back end of the season?
I started with Simpkins. Ideally, in an ideal world, I don't think I would have started with any of them, but there was no one to really grab at that last front row spot from memory. Yeah, no, there wouldn't have been anyone justifiable. So I went with the one Nuff. And because cash gen was fairly easy this season, I forward planned. I thought I'm going to grab a couple more and run with a squad of 23. So I think by the end of the bye period, I traded in Kalani Going and Kane Bradley, who ended up being a round 18 number and a number later in the later in the year.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't think I would have gone any more than 3. So I'm happy with that. What about you?
Yeah. I was the same. So I started with 2. So I think that was the big decision. So I started with Tuki Simpkins as well and Miles Martin from Canberra. So that allowed me to, I started with 1 in the 2RF and 1 in front row. So that way I was able to shuffle my front row and second row, because obviously we had Tino and Horsburgh as well. So it basically allowed any combination there, which I was really happy with to start the season. And I just think it's a very underrated move to start with Nuffs, especially if, and I should caveat that with, it's only if the options, the cheap options aren't there, and it really helps you bolster your squad. So this year, I think the big one was Royce Hunt. So a lot of super coaches started with him. I think he was 40 to 50% owned at round 1. And
yeah, was it that high?
Yeah, it was very high. And I'd watched him obviously fairly closely at Cronulla, and he's just a low minutes guy. And I just thought he's just going to be a disaster. You'll never want to play him. And that's actually how it turned out. Obviously, that could have gone the other way, and you know, I might have been buying him in round 3. So certainly a bit of luck involved there, but I think it's very dependent on the options available. I just have no hesitation. I don't think starting with 2 Nuffs, because you can always move them to a cheapie if you need to. I ended up with 3 as well. I can't remember the third one I had in, but I had an extra one extra Nuff. So
was it Bradley?
I never owned Bradley. I'm just getting a quick Tom Rodwell from the Roosters.
Oh, that's right. So, that's right.
Yeah. So I brought him in round 18, which is probably my most successful week of the year. And I know this was great for you too. That was the Nick Meaney week. I bought in Meaney for 165, Marky Mark for a ton, and Rodwell for 70. I think he scored something like that. So it was like 500. It felt like it was like 350 points or more worth of trades.
He was playing on the right wing that round, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Yeah. He got held up and he set up a nice try though. But yeah,
he was cheering for you.
Yeah. I was right up there at that point. I think that's when we sort of were both right up there. But it was one of those weeks where that was just the great, opportunistic thing and to come off with, Meaney just getting that fullback role in a game against the Cowboys, who are obviously one of the worst defensive teams all year. Being able to jump on those situations is just crucial. And obviously we'd actually chatted about that move in a Discord group together. And I suppose that's a good segue into my next question, which is how important was it for you being a part of the Supercoach community and different communities and in Discords or group chats? And how did that sort of help, help you along the journey this year?
Oh, massively. If I wasn't in Discord servers, I don't think I'd be playing Supercoach still. That's where I spent all my time talking about Supercoach, really.
Yeah.
So I guess I do, obviously, I spend most of my time in the Secret Society server. We're a pretty tight-knit group that's been playing together. It's about our fifth year now. And in my opinion, some of the greatest minds are in there. That includes
there's no opinion in there, mate. That's the reddest hot group of super coaches, bar none, without a doubt. I think at one point during the year, how many are in there? Like 80 or something. It's not that many.
Less than 100. Yeah,
and five out of the top 10 were in there at one point during the year. I think three ended up in the top 10, and a few just outside as well.
It's going to be hard to beat this season. It's been very memorable. That actually includes two of our mates and other baller contributors, Realm and Myth.
Yep.
They ran a subscription group inside the Supercoach Hub, and it was really successful. I would have consumed all the content that they put out every week, and it was great food for thought, honestly. And also, this was my first proper season really consuming all the baller content as well, and the tools and everything that you guys provide, which definitely helped along the way. So I do really appreciate all that.
Is it something that sort of the what we're trying to do at Baller with, obviously the modeled projections and analytics that sits kind of underneath the surface level scoring? Is that sort of how you sort of like to, even before this season, is that how you like to think about the game and sort of more what's, I suppose lower, underneath that surface level data that's sort of more publicly available?
Sort of, yeah. And that's where you guys were really helpful, because you don't see it anywhere else. The projections were really good.
Yeah, obviously you add your secret sauce over the top, with everything. It's a big melting pot, isn't it? It's not just projections, or it's not just rankings. It's like being able to understand the roles that players are playing within teams and ownership and the sort of more game theory elements of it all. Like it's a big melting pot of decision process, isn't it?
Yeah, and obviously a lot of it comes down to luck, but if you have the most information available to you, and you think about it in many different ways, and you can come to your own conclusion, I think, that's how we've been kind of going about it.
Mate, so we've got through the bye period and you're pretty well set up, and as you mentioned, you played quite a conservative strategy. Was that your mindset going into the run home? You said you wanted to have seven trades for last seven rounds. Is that how you sort of foresaw that going, or was it a bit more dependent that you were still up there so high and you thought, I've got a really nice squad here, I can kind of just keep cancelling out, and if I play well, and I'm going to put words in your mouth here, but if I get my captains right, then that'll allow me to be, stay up really high?
That's pretty accurate. That's how I thought about it. Well, I guess we'll talk about captains maybe a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it worked. It just happened that I had seven trades after round 20. Like I said before, I was after the big Meanie game, and that's gonna be one of the more memorable rounds for us, hey? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I was fifth after that round, and that's where I thought, yeah, like I'm gonna play real safe and conservative here. I went Pappenhausen to Edwards in round 19.
Yep.
That's actually when Edwards rested.
Yes.
But I do remember, obviously he got ruled out 24 hours out or something. But I already traded out Pappenhausen.
Right.
This is when we kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Speculated that it was more than just a calf tightness sort of issue.
Yes. Yes. Well, they weren't giving any. They weren't giving any information about that injury, were they? They were.
No.
They were just.
That's another big. Another big lesson is you can't trust clubs with injuries at all.
Yeah.
Like at all.
No, the physio is really the most valuable resource on that front. Like the honesty and transparency that he gives, just not giving a shit about what clubs think. He's just going to tell it how it is.
Yeah. Exactly, because he's not tied to anything, is he? So he'll just like, you know. So, and obviously he's very knowledgeable and resourceful. So I think he's the man to listen to.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think obviously I knew Edwards was ruled out, but I just held him because I think I might have taken a loop that round, or maybe, or I just had 18 and had a good
NPR score. Yeah, I think that was it, yeah.
So, yeah, maybe it was Horsburgh or something against Newcastle.
Yep.
That sounds about right, yeah. So I think I just took his score as a third fullback sort of thing.
That was a week where numbers were really tight. It was a mini buy round, sort of post Origin, and I remember trying to fill squads. That's actually a week that I really made a huge mistake on my own team, and I actually see that as a big sliding doors moment because I brought in Nathan Cleary that week. Accidentally, I traded Jaden Campbell into my team for Cleary. I was going to bring Cleary in, but he didn't start, and so I thought, okay, I'm just going to bring Campbell in instead. But my trade never went through, and I got blessed. So Cleary scored a try in the second half off the bench.
Yeah.
But what that meant was that I wasn't able to get Dylan Edwards the following week, and that was the week where he obviously went bananas, and he was highly captained up top, and I went from 6th down to 27th or 30 something that week, and it was a bit of a never quite got back on the right leg.
I felt for you then, mate. I didn't realize it was an accident. I thought you intended to have Cleary in there.
No, yeah, big accident. So yeah, I can't. It was just one of those ones where, you know, life gets in the way. I'm taking kids out, and I made the trade, and I thought the trade had gone through, but I didn't double check it. And I got to the game, and I'm like, oh, how good's this? Cleary was on 5 at halftime. I'm like, I'm so glad I changed that. And then I checked the app, and I just felt sick. Like, and I'm sure a lot of super coaches have felt that way before, you know.
Yeah.
But it's. I mean, that's probably a good point. Like, it's so you have to stay on top of it so much. Like one little mistake can really throw you off, and it seems like you managed to avoid any of that carnage.
Yeah. Besides that little mistake I made, not putting Munster on field, earlier in that round. But you would have had Hughes and Hines, and then Cleary in the flex. So you couldn't have brought in Edwards next week, even though you probably wanted to.
Yeah, that's right. So I'll never know for sure if I wanted Edwards, but he was the obvious trade in that week because remember they rested Cleary.
Yeah.
So Edwards had the goal kicking, they were playing Souths. It was sort of all signs pointing to yes for Edwards to go big, and obviously no one really thought he had a 180 in his locker, but
did not expect it.
No, and then I think from there, the move later on was I was telling the boys in the office, I would like to have thought that I would have done Edwards to Walsh later on at the right time, because I ended up bringing Turbo in over Walsh, but that was before Walsh had the great role.
Yeah.
Well, Reynolds, before Reynolds was, but there was a week there where there was a very obvious move, I thought, to move Edwards on to Walsh post when Walsh got that low score against the Storm, and then and then he had the kick in and obviously the role the following week. But yeah, we'll never know, mate. But that's okay. I enjoy the season thoroughly. Like it's just so much fun being in contention and up high in the ranks. And
still had a fantastic season, mate.
And no, thank you, mate.
Yeah, I think Appreciate it's worth noting.
Thank you. Mate, so we've been through your season overall. I want to sort of ask you, what advice would you have for super coaches who are, you know, looking to improve their game? What are some resources? You know, obviously you've said Baller already, and we want to engage as many super coaches as we can. But what advice would you have for coaches who want to improve their super coaching?
That's a good question. I reckon my biggest advice for future seasons is to not stress. We talked about process and all that and not overreacting. You don't have to play a perfect game to win, yep, clearly, or anywhere close. I obviously didn't. And you don't have to be too wild or out of the box with your decisions to win. I played a fairly straightforward approach, and I think last year's winner was pretty similar from what I gathered. I think he was very similar as well. So there's also no exact science to super coaches there. Like,
no,
some of the stuff I've done might not be applicable next year. So I would say to play it by ear, and this is cliche, but back yourself.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice, man. I think you're right about the it's not, every year is different. Like, there's different, it's some years it's easy to make cash and some years it's harder. So you have to prioritize and make sacrifices to points to be able to generate cash to build your squad for later on. And sometimes it's really easy and you can do that. I just want to touch on that for a sec, because team value is something that we hear a lot about, but a lot of super coaches don't really understand the importance. Obviously, fundamentally, we know that the more your team value is, the better players you can sort of buy. But in terms of consciously thinking about team value and where you sit relative to other super coaches, was that something that was playing on your mind in those sort of, you know, earlier to middle rounds of the season?
Yeah, I do value team value quite highly. I do prioritize it. But I guess it depends. Like, there's a difference between buying and holding fullbacks that fluctuate in price, or a center wing that fluctuate in price, but you hold them long term, as opposed to a cash grab,
yep,
grabbing a cheapie or a mid ranger or something like that. So in terms of face value, yes, but I think there's deeper layers into how you should compare to other teams and where you're, like, what positions you're strong at compared to other people, where you think you can get an advantage, where you might be weak in, that might be a target for you. So yeah, it is very team dependent in that front.
Yeah. I always wrestle with it, because I like to think that it doesn't always matter, but I think there's a bit of a threshold. I think you need to have enough money, but obviously we see teams who are right up high and their team value might be $1 million less. I don't think that's always the case though, and that earlier on they must have had better team value, but I think it certainly gets to a point in the year where team value becomes less important in terms of focus.
Yes.
But I think you have to have a certain level of value, certainly, or you do get left behind. And it's a bit of a sick thing, because team value and points is actually so closely correlated as well. Like, if you score well through those rounds, your team is going to be more valuable and you've generated cash. So yeah, it can be a double hit sometimes, mate. Final question: What's next? You've accomplished Mount Everest for Supercoach. Are you going to take a break? Is it a holiday, or is it mission accomplished and that's retirement?
Yeah. Look, like I said, if I wasn't on Discord and other communities and stuff like that, I reckon I'd probably stop playing. But no, honestly, there's no passion lost for the game. I'm taking a break. I'm not playing the finals format. I need a rest.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm gonna gear up for the hoops. I'm gonna play NBA,
SC. Nice.
And I'll be back ready to go next season. Sitting awesome, firing.
Mate. Awesome, mate. Can't wait to hopefully have you back on Baller next year for a little bit. And you mentioned Discord there. We've obviously launched the Baller Discord. You've been in there chatting away. I'm really, really excited about the community we're going to start building at Baller. So please head to baller.live/discord or find us on socials anywhere and you can join and come in to chat with myself and with Finn and heaps of other like-minded super coaches. So be a very inclusive environment, and we'd love to have all the listeners in there.
Get in, mate, boys.
Yeah, get in, boys. Yeah. and girls. Absolutely.
Discord is the way of the future.
Absolutely. Finn, mate, it's been fantastic to chat and pick your brain and listen. I always think that I know a lot about Supercoach, but I've learned a lot just listening to you tonight. And
I appreciate that.
Mate, you're probably the most deserving champ I can remember. That's for sure. You're a very humble young guy, and you deserve all the success you had and have. And mate, it's been really great to get to know you over the past year. So all the best for the rest of the year and your break, and we'll see you back fit and firing for next year.
Yep, absolutely. I'm happy to be back on the ballers as well if I'm welcome.
Always, mate. Thank you very much. We'll catch you later.
See you, mate.